When Sean let me know on Friday afternoon that I'd be doing this, I had all kinds of things running through my head. The standard procedure is to choose some candy stick that you have stuck in a file and do that one. And I don't like doing those things. That's too easy. So what I want to do, though, is talk about where we've come in 13 months. Sean's doing it in a very formal way to talk about our worship and why we've constructed our worship the way we have. I want to do it in a little more informal way, looking at it from my Christian experience and how we've arrived here and what it means. I came to the Lord through discipleship. I hired a guy that gave me the gospel, and it hit me like a thunderbolt in February of 1985, and by August I was enrolled in seminary and had turned my business over to the guy that gave me the gospel, and I spent the next 3 years locked in my office looking at stuff that I'd never even thought I could do, and it rocked my world big time. And ever since then, the idea to be able to transfer what God has said has been the big thing for me. The, as Sean puts it, a truth tube filler. Finding those little pieces, those little nuggets to demonstrate to somebody so they can store it away and say, wow, that's a great little Bible fact and isn't that cute. The thing that I would have done if I would have pulled out the candy stick is I would have told you to open your Bibles to John 3:13. And I would have read this. This is Jesus talking to Nicodemus, and he says, "No one has ascended into heaven, but he who came down from heaven, that is the Son of Man, who is in heaven." And I would have purposely read that to you out of the King James, or the New King James, because in your ESV, or your New American Standard, you don't have that phrase, "who is in heaven." And it's interesting to me that textual critics say that that's not in the best manuscripts, and it's the old story, the oldest ones are the best and all that kind of stuff. But there is a substantial argument that sometimes the oldest ones aren't necessarily the best, that some of the newer ones are actually more accurately translated and stored away and all of that. And I'd go into a long discussion about textual criticism. But I think the bigger point in this is Jesus is demonstrating to Nicodemus, at that time when Nicodemus is going, how can all this be? And he's telling him, not only am I the Son of Man, but am I also omnipresent. I am also in heaven as I'm actually speaking to you, which is like rocks your world, okay? And there's been many journal articles written on this and so forth. Sean chose to stay away from it, preparing you guys for the shocker, you know, about Jesus did, who said John 3:16, which used to be one of my favorites also. So but that's the kind of thing that I enjoy doing and want to do that. But I see our group and our church family, the way we're growing, that it's way bigger than that. And that's what we're realizing. We came to this congregation fairly mature. Most of us know our Bibles. We've taught our kids well. We love the Lord. We want to do things for the Lord and all of that. And we come together like this. And when we come together, it's something way more special than maybe a lot of us have been familiar with. And there's a lot of ingredients in this that make it that way. The reason that I had them put that up there is the idea of, that's a Hubble Space Telescope photo, and you can look at any one of them or look at one of those great picture books that are coffee table books of what they see, and you realize how teeny we are and how big God's creation is, just what we can see there, and we're only seeing part of it. And, you know, we're just, our planet would be a speck in that thing, you know. And you realize, whoa, we're a lot smaller. You go back to those days when you're on the camping trip and you laid on your back out in the night and you looked up in the stars and you go, whoa, I'm little. God is big. That's why there's no atheist, you know, there's no 5-year-old atheist going around. They know something's bigger than them that made this. And that's like big time exciting. And that leads us into why we call our church Trinity Evangel Church. Sean has mentioned these things, but I want to rehearse them because they are such a big deal. We had a Life to Life leaders meeting on Saturday morning, and Dave Mills has finished reading Fred Sanders' book on the Trinity, and it's really rocked his world. He's been a Christian for a long time, but the whole idea that the triune God did not need us before the foundation of the world. They had fellowship together before he even created the world. And then he creates the world, and through his revealed world tells us he chose us in him before he even created it, is just, you know, whoa, I can't get my head around that. So we worship this triune God that now has us come into fellowship with him through the gospel. And how did he do that? He has to kill himself. God kills himself so that we have a way to come to him. That's like, whoa. That's unbelievable. And each one of that then transforms each one of us into the image of his son. Just that alone, we should be able to sit around here for the rest of our lives and go, thank you. And be so loving outside, so excited to tell other people. And then the other thing is the evangel, the gospel, and then the church, us all gathering together. When we gather together, though, we are very used to the church involving us in programs. And that's why when you go on our website, we have the Trellis and Vine, the book, or the Vine and the Trellis, you know, whichever way it goes. But the issue is, we are the vine. The trellis is only needed if we have what? A growing plant. If you put the seed in the ground and nothing's growing, you don't need that great big thing stuck in your garden. You only need that thing to hold up the plant as it's going. And you build it in the way that it's growing. We've only been at this 3 months. We're not sure what God has in store for us, other than we know we need to fellowship with each other and, you know, do the one another's and that kind of thing. So we don't want to build a structure to force everybody into. We want the body to be that structure, and as we see it growing, then come alongside and help it with trellis. But never to make the trellis and then go, you have to do it this way. Now you might say, but you've created this system of worship with the 5 C's and we're doing that. Yes, and Sean's explaining that to you in detail, why those came about. You'll notice, I think, through the last thing of Leviticus 9, that was kind of a shocker for our New Testament Christianity to see how that's modeled and why we're doing that same thing, picturing it. We don't do the same sacrifices over and over, but we picture that as we worship him corporately like this. That's huge. And so that makes us think about, if we're coming together to worship, how do we then live, right? Francis Schaeffer wrote a book about that, that how should we then live if these things are true, okay? If they're true, it should change the way we live and the way that we look at everything, which then gets into the worldview kind of situation, that the axle of grace is the hub of the wheel, and we only get in that axle of grace through Christ's sacrifice, and in that axle of grace, then we have the spokes that are the catechesis is one spoke, symbol and liturgy is another one, narrative and lifestyle go out to the rim, but the rim of the wheel is the lordship of Christ over everything. That means everything. The flat tire maybe that you had this morning, the idea that Sean got sick on Friday and couldn't preach this morning, the idea that I was going to do one thing and now I'm doing another, the idea that I'm sitting up here wondering if I'm making a connection. All of those things, he's Lord over all of that. And then when you start to really investigate it, to realize if he wasn't holding together the molecules, according to Colossians, we'd all explode. You know, we're here only because he is Lord over everything, which then should alter our thinking. Well, if I'm doing anything, changing the baby's diapers, emptying the trash, doing math, inventing a new computer program, whatever it is, he's Lord over that task. That's huge. And we don't think that way in our thing. We're doing the Lord's work. I'm out evangelizing, and I'm, you know, another person came to Christ because I visited him and I gave him the gospel and all of that. We don't think big. And I think God wants us to think way outside the box that most of us have been in. And that whole thing, as we thought about it and have talked about it before, like catechesis, we're very good at that. Most of us know our Bibles. We can do the sword drills, and we can talk about what we think about that passage, and we've heard six sermons on that, and I like that guy's take on it, but I don't like that guy. That's part of catechesis, but if I have these facts, then what do I do with them? I have to have some narrative, some story to tell, and I need to know what place in the story I am. How did we get here? We didn't just show up here because we all used to go to a different church, and then we moved up here because our kids moved up here, and then I go to this church. And how did these churches even get here? How did Grace Baptist Church become Grace Bible Church? How did we choose Trinity Evangel Church? What stream of Christendom did we come out of? And what baggage do we carry in that stream? How many of us are converted from Roman Catholicism or just rank paganism? Or some of us like myself that would have told you I was saved at 9 in the Baptist church, I got baptized and all that kind of stuff, and then I lived like heck till I was 37. There was no way I was saved. I was a creature of the 60s, and I was there, I lived it and did it, okay? And I and the whole thing is that you're part of this thing, and your story is important to you, but you need to know where your story is encompassed in God's story. It started off with Adam, and he's the first man. And then the second Adam comes along and allows us to have fellowship, Christ, and in between that, there's all these people doing all these things. And as we read these Bible stories, I'm really bored reading Leviticus. Well, I think Leviticus, after the last couple weeks, is taking a different flavor, I'm hoping. But when you read the stories of the same old thing and the same people do the same stupid thing, they come back to the Lord, they get straightened out, and the next generation drops the ball. That is the story. And that's why we want... That's why we have the kids in here. We want them to watch us worship and model after us. We want the whole thing to be a ongoing story, knowing where we came from and where we're going and what we're doing. And then that necessarily drives our lifestyle. Are we supposed to be somber, only wear black and just do these things and don't drink or smoke or go with girls that do, and therefore I'm a Christian? And you can prove your car's a Christian, And the problem is, no, you should be what? Joyful. We should be having a great time. People should be jealous of how much fun we're having. Not, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to have a great time. And then at the end, I'll sign up, and then I'll be able to go to heaven. But right now, I'm just going to have my party time. That's no time. The party is here. And we should be having that party, and people should be infected by the joy we have. And that's why we want them to see we are making a step beyond as we fellowship together. And if we aren't, and you're not doing that, crank it up a notch. Make that happen. And by doing that, what happens? Then people find out you're just like them. You got the same problem they got. You got a wife that you yelled at. You got a grandkid or a kid that you didn't handle right, and you have to then go ask forgiveness from your 3-year-old or whatever and show them the joy that can be. And then as you do that, you really become that person. You are that Christ to those people. That's huge. And when that starts to happen and you do that with somebody, and then that somebody gets it and goes and gives that gospel to somebody else, and you meet that person coming all the way back around, you really transferred it. Because that person then transferred that truth to that guy, then your spiritual grandchild that you never met before comes back around and tells you the same thing. You're really passing it on. That's the Christian life. That's the Great Commission. God does not tell us to go build a church. He says, go and make disciples. And by making disciples, then we have a bunch of people that are believers that then fellowship together like this to be encouraged so that we go out and do the work of the ministry. And it's the same old thing. You've heard all this before, but it's incredibly different, I think, now for us as we've realized, coming from our fundamental background, that we need to be more out, more open, more involved, more just overflowing to the community. And we don't need to be afraid. We are the agents of the creator of the universe. You know, we are those people. And in our day and age, you know, we're told, oh, well, that's only for church, that's for Sunday, but don't do that, and don't bring this up at work, and all of those kind of things. If we really believe all these things, he's Lord over Boeing, even if it might be run by a pagan. Now, I'm not telling you to go down to Boeing and tell your boss, well, I'm going to preach the gospel today and I'm not going to put the plane together. You know, obviously, you do your work. But the thinking in the back of your head should just alter the way you look at everything. And it's huge. And if we raise up a people that are like that, we will change the society. Now, in our camp, in our eschatology, and we have not deserted that we think that it's going to get bad and there's going to be a tribulation and there is going to be a millennium and all of that. But right now and here, the instruction is to go be the light unto the world. Train up your children to be those people. Any place you are, challenge those things when they're godless. I mean, we live in a country that kills millions of babies. That's just inexcusable. That's crazy. And we've lived with it so long that we just go, well, that's politics and that's that. And my faith is private and I really couldn't involve myself in that. And, you know, you see these politicians dance around. I mean, they had a situation where the same-sex marriage is. And this one lady apparently on the news said that she's a Christian, but she didn't really want to impose her Christianity on the rest of society. So she's going to have to vote for that law. Well, think about it. If Christ is Lord over that, she cannot do that. No, you don't do that. You either believe it or you don't. And it's when you start thinking about things that way, it changes what you're going to do about it. Now, you don't have to be the biggest jerk in the world and go down and run out the door here and go find some guy doing something stupid and start lecturing him. You know, we need to be biblically based. And, you know, when you read 1 Peter 3:15, that you should have a reason for the hope that is in you to everyone who asks. That doesn't mean I go out and start grabbing people and say, hey, buddy, I need to tell you about the hope that's within me. And he looks at me and said, and who asked you to talk to me? You know, but the point is, when he does ask, you're ready. And you can dump the load on him and you can bring him into the fold, because God is the one that opens his eyes to that truth anyway. But that changes your mind, and it changes the way you approach things, and it changes your apologetic, how you defend the faith. Yeah, we can have a lot of good reasons, and we can stand up and have conferences on this scientific evidence for this and that, and those things are good, but you know what? Mostly those things are good for Christians because they reinforce what you already know. The issue is you can't argue those people into the kingdom unless God opens their eyes. And the issue is not whether evolution is true. The issue is that person a sinner? He needs to know that. You know, if he goes, well, yeah, something bigger than me made the universe. It's like Dawkins when he got backed into the corner. He said, well, maybe aliens just brought life to this planet. I could go with that. You know, I mean, okay. But who made the alien? You know, it's always that question back as you do that. But arguing with those kind of people is probably not going to bring them to heaven. Now, I'm not saying people don't come to faith watching all kinds of things and hearing all kinds of things. I mean, I know a guy that got saved watching Channel 40, Benny Hinn. He came home disco dancing, and he had his big frou-frou hair and all his, you know, nylon stuff on and bell bottoms, yeah, and the boots. And he's like half drunk, and he comes home, sits in his apartment, turns on the TV, and Benny Hinn is going, and he hit the gospel, as he does occasionally, you know, broken watches right twice a day, and and he heard the gospel, and he got saved. He went down on his knees, and boom, You know, so God can use those things. I'm not saying he doesn't. But if we're thinking it through, we need to be way beyond that, thinking way deeper than that. And the big issue is when you start realizing Christ is Lord over all, you know all this stuff. You know God is omniscient. He sees everything. He knows your thoughts before you think them and all of that. But when you start thinking he made that and that's just a speck of it, and he made all these people and he made us have all these little, molecules and cells inside of us. And Tim gave a series in our Sunday school once where the little parachute thing is spinning around inside of a cell and it goes, 70,000 RPM a minute. RPM, and it's just a little piece in a cell and it looks like a little helicopter and it's spinning around, not making a contact inside a cell in your body, floating. How does that work? And I'm waving around and that thing's still spinning around in there somewhere. And, we're going to get better microscopes and see something even smaller than that. He's in charge of all that stuff. That didn't just happen by accident, And we need to be cognizant of that and realize that he has plucked us out of this and opened our eyes and made us people that can have fellowship with him and special fellowship with each other. As we talk and rub off on each other, that's an incredible growing experience. Because as you try to explain to your friends what you're thinking about this, even in your family, we have great theological debates all the time. And the idea is that as we're thinking about that, we're honing each other and you're seeing, oh my, I didn't think of it that way. I didn't think of this. Ooh, that's bigger than I thought it was. This is exciting. And as we do that, We're growing, and it's like an organism. The vine is growing. And so, we see this, this kind of talking is the 50,000-foot level. And if you guys have not listened to Sean's series that he did on discipleship, it's available on the website. But you need to think about the teaching in our groups kind of like this. This is the 50,000-foot level. I'm flying this big bomber, and I'm throwing these bombs out there for you guys, and some people are taking notes or you'll listen to the tape, and okay, I get that kind of thing, but you're really not relating with me, and I'm not sure that everybody's hearing what I think that I'm saying and all that kind of stuff. So then you get down to the life-to-life groups where we talk more in a smaller group, 20 people or whatever, and some of this time is devoted to what's being taught, what do you think's going on. So now you see, well, maybe people are connecting. But out of that, you're still only connecting with the group. It's not till you go one-on-one with somebody or you actually get in that person's kitchen and say, what do you think? Did you get this? Or what do you think about what was just said? Do you really understand if you're connecting with that person and you've made the communication gap? So that's you're dropping now down to the 10,000-foot level. So in those groups. And the men-to-men, I forgot men-to-men in Titus 2. Those are kind of a level above the life-to-life. That's where the women get together. And the women are there. And you know what their main focus is? The older women are to teach the other women how to love their husbands. That's their job. Now, that's crazy. You're supposed to love your husband. I wouldn't have married him if I didn't love him. But the problem is, as time goes on, you realize that guy's a jerk and you got to learn how to love him, And it's always fascinating how, the bloom wears off and you got to, at that point, now we're loving supernaturally. And that's what we do because we have God's Spirit in us and this whole thing is supernatural. There's no way I'd pick you clowns to be with, right? But since we are together, we have this incredible supernatural ability to communicate against, about, and for that person that made that and made us. That's just wow, how does that work? And then as we start rubbing off, we go, well, that guy's not so bad, And then it never dawns on us to think about what they think about us, right? But that is the fellowship. And what's so exciting is to see as we come together in our small little body how everybody is just blah, 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 and somebody goes off and they got to talk and like the Martin girl coming back, it's seamless. I come into the thing on Friday night, and I look over there, and there she is. And then she said, well, I'm here to bring Grandma now. And, you know, she's going to take everything. And Cheryl, where did you go, Cheryl? You moved to somebody else's house now because you were staying with Grandma. Now you're going to the Vanderbeckens, right? No? Where do you go next? Who? The Hickok house. I mean, that's incredible. Look at the cross-pollinization that happens just like that, you know? It's all these little bees out there flying all around. That is Christianity. We are infiltrating the society, and as we do that, we realize, oh, that guy's, he has crazy theological beliefs, but he's a Christian. You know, as we, when we first started and had to get out of our house, and we went to and did the Pentecostal church when we were up at, I don't know what that area is called, but it was a ways away from here. And Sean started meeting with that pastor. And yeah, we got some beliefs that, you know, we don't exactly align. But this guy's a Christian. He loves the Lord. And we're, you know, we need to get outside our box and realize there's a lot of people out there that are going to be in heaven that we don't necessarily want to be with every Sunday, right? And that's a big thing. That's hard for us that want to cut it straight, and we have lots of theology books, and we got lots of notes, and we've taken lots of classes, and we know the truth, and if that guy doesn't see it that way, he's a heretic. Well, you know what? We're all heretics. Every one of us has heretical beliefs, and we got to keep refining those things. And as we talk with people and see that they love the Lord, sometimes they so outshine our golden rule, right? The issue is that if the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, and then your neighbor as yourself, how are you doing? And I know we're not doing so well. We do good with the people we like Jim said. But the problem is the one I don't like. How do I do with him? And love can take, you know, a stiff thing. There is tough love. I mean, there are those times where you got to be tough, and that is the loving thing to do. But most of the time, it's you being a jerk. That's why you're not being nice to the guy. And the idea is, as you're nice to that person and as you involve yourself with them, they are going to see your flaws too. I mean, anytime you disciple somebody, they say, oh, I want to meet with you because, you know, you're a great man of God and all that. And I always laugh at that because they get together with you and all of a sudden they see, well, you're just a dude like I am, you know. You got a few more facts in your head, but so what? And the excitement is when they catch that and realize all they do, they can collect those facts too. But the real issue is to put yourself, surrender to God so that he's the one driving your life. That the Spirit is driving you, not you. You know, which is what? Walking in the Spirit. And when you do that, you know when you do it. And you know when you don't do it. And we're those of us who have been church for a while, we can be pretty good. We can pretend for a while. You know, we can go along. But those of us that know us, they just know. Their radar's beep, beep, beep. He's not walking in the Spirit. You know, give him some room. What's happening? And what you want to do is then you come over alongside that person. What's the problem? What do we got to do? How do we fix it? How do we move ahead on that? And all of that is what? Life on life. Living the faith with each other. That's huge. That is the Christian life. And when you do that, I mean, I've met with guys and, you know, they've been married a long time and the lady doesn't want to have kids and the guy wants to have kids. And you think, well, you're a Christian. You should just, you know, let me give you this Bible verse. You should have a kid. You know, it says right here, be fruitful and multiply. And, you know, you say, well, what is your wife like doing? Well, she likes all these sports things and all of that kind of stuff. I said, well, no, what? I mean, she married you, clown, you know, what does she like about that? Well, she likes movies. Well, yeah, I know, the chick flicks, right? You know, no shoot 'em up movies. Well, that's true, but she likes the chick flicks. Okay, well, why don't you watch movies with her? And, well, okay. 3 weeks later, it was like, whoa, what happened? And what happened was those people reconnected. And there's always that kind of thing. And it never gets stale. I mean, I've been around with Gail for a while, and and she's hung in there. But it, and I'm, I am, we have a kind of a bizarre family, especially living with Sean and Morgan and the grandkids and everything. It's like, whoa. And Morgan and I are like super social. I mean, you got to sit right next to us. We want to talk about everything. What do you think about that? What do you think about this? Blah, 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 blah. Morgan and Sean are like, whoa, give me some space. I want to think. I don't want to, I won't just, you know, fly off the handle about everything. And Gail's that way. And I'm always, you know, huddling up. We got to do this together. We got to, you know, I live with you 24 hours a day. We live in the same house. We got the same little tiny room. What are you doing? You know? And I said, well, I can't get enough of that. Leave me alone. And you have to learn. You know, sometimes she needs her space. And so the exact reverse of my first story is that I need to give her her space sometime. And when she gets her space, then she comes back and refreshed. So it's all these balances. There is no one answer. You know, you don't go to some seminar over the weekend, save your marriage. You know, you just like throwing a twig in the fire and now you're saved. No, man, it's way more than that. Once you get saved, there's all kinds of transformation that goes on and you will develop into something just amazing, you know. And it's, you just don't know what God's going to do with you. So that all-encompassing lordship of Christ is huge in the picture of this thing. Now, the next thing that happens is as we look at the church and we realize, okay, we've got this gathering. We've now done this for 13 months. We've got life-to-life groups going, and they've been going, what, a big 6 months now. Whoa, boy, we really have done that well. And but as that's happening, we see different relationships happening. And as you meet in a life-to-life group, then a person says, well, I want to meet with you one-on-one. And you know, if it's you and you've never done that, you're going to go, what does he want to meet with me for? Is he mad at me? You know, he didn't. Is he going to confront me? You know, and you know, all of that goes through your mind. Do it. Just do it. And if you don't like somebody, go up and tell them, hey, you know what? I don't like you, but I'd like to get to know you. Think about it. Would that be a, that'd be like a different way to get acquainted, right? But the idea is, if we're his people, we, sorry to get too close. If we're his people, we should be able to go up and, you know, what you're doing there bugs me. And I bug a lot of people. I mean, Terry even warned me that I shouldn't say stupid or fool in this message. See, I didn't say it to anybody. But the idea is your enthusiasm should override that. And if people get to know you, I mean, you can't be just a jerk, okay? But be yourself and be that way. I mean, your mom, is she here somewhere? Wait, there, where are you? There you are, yeah. Now, you want to know what's going on? Ask Erika, right? She'll tell you straight up, I don't like this, I do like this. And that's really good. And for those of us that are doing this church, we want to know that. And we're trying to demonstrate that to you as we go around and visit the groups and all of that. We want that feedback. That's why the Men to Men group has been going on 13 months through that book on elders, and you've seen sometimes we go through a few pages, sometimes we get stuck on one principle, and it blows the whole thing up because people, when they come and visit, different guys have come that don't go to this church, and they always go away going, wow, I have never seen people that are in charge of the church stand up there and defend themselves and lay it all out there like that and have that discussion. We're doing that on purpose because we think the Bible teaches that you don't lord it over them. You don't tell them what to do. You do by example. You lead by example. And if my example is bad, don't follow it, you know. But if the example is good, but you're a different personality than I am, don't think you got to be some nutcase like I am and jumping and, you know, doing all kinds of different things. The nice, calm guy can do the same thing and have the same joy at whatever level he's doing it with. And all of us are uniquely gifted so that we contribute to the body in the unique ways that we are. And so we're not trying to squelch the different viewpoints of the analytical viewpoint or the just happy-go-lucky guy that wants to have a party or the guy that's just a good hardworking guy that doesn't talk much, but he wants to serve and he wants to do whatever. But you want to encourage the guy that doesn't talk much to talk. You want to encourage the guy that's always running his mouth, tell him to shut up sometimes. I mean, like, if I go to the group, I need to keep biting my tongue because I want to jump in and say something. And I realize, no, don't say anything, because the idea is we want to encourage other people to say stuff. So it's always this balance. But as you work through all of that, it's amazing how God will teach you that. And you see that. One of the books that I've read just lately is a book by John Milton Gregory, right? Seven Laws of Teaching. And this guy wrote this book back in the 1850s, I think. And his big point in the book is, if you're not speaking the same language to somebody, they can't understand you. And you know what I found out? I wasn't speaking the same language to my wife. Now, we've been married how long? 41 years, yeah. Now, that's a problem. Now, obviously, you know, we get to the same place on time and stuff, but we have a business that Gail does the books on, and I was not talking, and she was not talking the right language to me. And Morgan became our kind of moderator, going, she read the book, and she's going, yeah, I think there's something to that. So as we started realizing I needed to phrase something differently or ask it in a different way so that I was getting the answer I was asking for. I thought I was being very clear. I was being very businesslike. This is what I want, that. She didn't want to hear it that way. She wants to hear it a different way. Now, am I compromising? Yeah, for a guy like me, I don't want to compromise. I told her what to do. I just want to hear it. But no, that doesn't work so well. If I talk the same language, then we communicate, and it goes a lot smoother. That's probably a bad example explained badly, but you probably feel out how that works with people. There are ways to get it done, and that's not being unchristian to compromise, find a way to communicate with that person. Be different with some people. Some people do need the club. Some people need that hug. And that's just the way it works. And the problem is that even when you make the mistake, that can open up the door to get it fixed even better. You know, you say something stupid or somebody takes it the wrong way, go to that person and say, did you really mean to say that? And you go, well, yeah, what's wrong with that? And they say, well, that I think that was personally talking about me and you insulted me. Well, if it fits, yeah. But if it doesn't fit, no, I wasn't talking about you. I was talking about the principle out here. And the thing is that we are so ignorant, all right? We have been raised in a secular culture for the last 100 years, and it's crept into where we just accept all this stuff. And we don't think about it in the worldview way and that Christ is Lord over it. We just know, okay, I go to school now, I'm going to take this class in evolution, and I need it to get my biology degree. And okay, I'll argue with the professor, but I better get the answers right. I got to do that. Now, maybe that's the right thing to do. Maybe that's what you sacrifice to do. But the thing is, when you do that, you're buying into a system that is not looking at God as Lord over all. So you do have to work around that. But the thing is, you got to get it done. We got to be somewhere. There's all these wisdom calls that come up all the time. And for those of us in the truth camp that like hard edge, this is the way it is, we need to make those decisions and think about it. And some of us want to go out and be the sacrificial bomb in the thing. Others want to work quietly. All of that's part of the action. That's part of the body life. That's how it works, and that's the way it should be. So I want to end on this. This is kind of a bizarre quote to talk to you about, but it kind of talks about what we're doing, the neighbors and how we love unto each other in our society. R.L. Dabney was a preacher from the 1800s, and he made this statement in a pamphlet, and he said, government is not the creator, but the creature of human society. Now, all of us that are Bible people go, Romans 13, got to obey the government, all of that. But what he's saying is, listen, government is not the creator, but the creature of human society. Human societies made Julius Caesar. Human society's made Marx and Engels and, you know, Barack Obama and whoever, you know. Those people allowed those things to happen by whatever role they played in it. The government has no mission from God to make the community. On the contrary, the community should make the government. That's interesting, isn't it? Our whole thing, our government has evolved into the big mama. I will take care of you. I'll take care of your retirement. I'm going to give you health care. I'm going to make sure that you get this money. And, oh, you poor thing, you tripped and fell on the job, and now we'll have this thing come and get you and all of that kind of stuff. But listen to this sentence. The government has no mission from God to make the community. On the contrary, the community should make the government. We are the community, and we have a community of God in each one of us. We are a powerful entity together and separately to bring about change. We should be taking care of our parents. Some of us have stepped into that thing. I mean, the Martin girl coming back to live with her mom as she needs to have the knee surgery. That's a huge example. Those are things that all of us do. I mean, we've been through it with my parents and Gail's parents, and some of us that are getting older. Our kids are a bunch of flakes, so you're going to need to take care of me, you know. So, and think how well you're going to get to know me when you have to change my diaper, right? But that's the thing. I mean, well, you guys, Sandy, you brought your mom here, right? That's hard, but that is the right thing. You love your mom, and she changed your diapers, and now it's your turn, right? And that's huge. And when our body knows that, we should come alongside those people and help them in that. That is community, and that's the way God designed it to be. And we've let that go. You know, put them in the old folks' home. I don't want to deal with it. He's a jerk. That one's a jerk. My mom's mean. All of that kind of stuff. I know all that. Been there, done that. So anyway, those things. Think we are the community that create the government. Don't resign it over. And in this day and age, as far as it's slipped, it is hard sometimes to be peppy about it. But there is a generation going on, and we need to think long range. I've said it in a couple of the groups. I want to say it here. The idea that in the 1600s, the reformers, when they built a church, they had a 300-year building program. They knew we're laying the foundation stone, and 300 years from now we'll be done with the church. Well, can you imagine that in our day and age? Okay, 300 years from now we're going to have a building. Okay, do I give to it today? You know, that's what we need to think about. The generations; those guys are the next thing. Hallie, the babies that are just popping out now. They need to be the next generation. We need to think about them, investing in them. And our problem is we come from a eschatology that says it's going to hell in a handbasket and just hide out, and boy, I hope the rapture comes today because I really don't want to do this job. We need to be engaged, even if it does come. And I'm not saying we're changing our eschatology. We're not. But the issue is we need to be out and involved, and as we are involved, the gospel will penetrate the society and be out there for everybody. Okay, so I've come exactly to the right time. How about that? That was good. I have more, though, but I'm not going to do it. So now what do? I invite you guys back up, right? Yeah, I pray you guys come up. Yeah, well, now they've started up, and you'll notice that that we don't do the trick thing. Some churches you go to, and you know somebody prays, and then all of a sudden the band appeared, and you go, "How did they get there? Did they fly up there, or whatever happened?" You know, and we were admonished by one of our congregants that we shouldn't do that. You know, have them come up, and then when we pray, they can pray too, and we can all be good. So let's pray, and then we're going to do communion. And I'll come back up and we'll explain that. I got some surprises the way we're going to do communion today too. So. Okay. Father, thank you for this time together. I hope that people see that we want to be happy in you. just the idea to go and sing a happy song about Jesus, that you came to earth to solve the sin problem for us. And with that solved, we should be so excited to move on and be excited about building a bridge or making a piece of furniture or learning a new song, whatever. And help us to be those people. Help us to be those good citizens and those people that are infectious and change the society. So we thank you for that. And of course, we thank you most of all for your son. Amen.